Thank you. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group. Thank you very much for that gift. That's wonderful. The greatest gift I had is being able to come up here. It's a real privilege to have come up here for the last 12 weeks or something like that. And I do this. I've been doing this every year at this group for, I don't know how many years, a few years now. And so it's really, I like this group. I've told you that before. I mean, there's a lot of groups I like when I talk. And of course, it's absolutely essential that I do this stuff. And I'm going to discuss that a little bit since we're on the 12th step. For those of you who are interested, on December 30th, which is a Thursday, won't conflict with this meeting, I am starting a new series at Little River, which I also do every year, which I love. It's a great group. It's sort of like this group. In the same size and everything like that. It's on 79th Street in Miami, and y'all are welcome and invited there. It's a great group. So, I mean, this is exciting for me because I get to talk a little bit about the 12th step, which is one of my favorites. I want to read something from the big book. You know, I like doing that, so at least you get something out of this little puree. And this is from Vision for You. And I've read this part before, but you know, it's funny with different steps, it has different meanings. It's funny how you can read, a particular line or a particular sentence. Maybe it has to do with the fourth step, and then when you read on the 12th step, it means something, it has a little bit of a different meaning, but it's the same verbiage. So here's what I want to read y'all. It says, now and then, this is on Envision for You. It says, now and then, a serious drinker, being dry at the moment. Got any serious drinkers in here? I was a serious drinker. I drank from the noble art of getting bombed. I didn't drink to have just one or two. It didn't make any sense to me. You know, so my feeling is I'm in a group of serious drinkers here. Being dry at the moment, you know the interesting thing it says? It doesn't say how long he's dry. You know, you sort of think that maybe it's a newcomer. It could be, you know, a week or two or three or four, but it could be a guy with 20 years. It says, now and then a serious drinker being dry at the moment. Now, this is what he says. He says, I don't miss it at all. Anybody ever say that? I don't miss it. I don't miss it. I feel better. Anybody ever say, hey, I feel better? You ever say that?
Yeah.
You know, this was a mystery to me when I first read it. It was a mystery. I didn't understand the logic of it. I didn't understand the logic. It didn't make any sense. One of the gifts of the Holy Spirit in the Bible, which they studied all before this. Well, it's a long story. I'm not going to go into it. You know, the 12th step, I don't know whether you know this, but in the 12th step, I'll read a part of it. It says, Bill Wilson says, you've got to be the good Samaritan every day. You know, it sort of bogged your mind if you didn't understand things, why you had to be a good Arab. You know what I mean? Well, Samaritan's not really an Arab. Somebody from Samaria, but then you have to go into Samaria thing. You got to know about the Moabites, and so you kind of figure where that Good Samaritan thing came from. But then you'd have to go to Luke chapter 10, where Jesus talks about the Good Samaritan, but because that's where they got it from. They were reading that book for the first 4 years. They were reading the Holy Bible, and then after reading the Holy Bible, being steeped in that, in counseling with Sam Shoemaker and Ed Dowling and things like that, they came up with the Big Book. And so there's a lot of stuff in the Big Book which is lifted from the Bible. So for you to really, if you really were into understanding what he meant when he said you have to be the Good Samaritan every day, which is, by the way, something you got to be if you want what they had, you might want to read that story of the Good Samaritan and shed a little light on it for you. But in any event, it says, now and then a serious drinker being dry at the moment. So while I was saying this on the way up here, the guy driving asked me about there's a gift. There's certain gifts we're given in here. Because it's the same spirit. They're talking about the same spirit. You know, the spirit, the sunshine of the spirit. They talk about being involved in the fellowship of the spirit. Apparently there's a lot of spiritual stuff going on here. You know, and well, it's the same spirit. The spirit they were talking about in the Bible, the spirit they were talking about in the Old and New Testament, the same spirit is going on here. It's the same deal. And there's gifts to that spirit. There's gifts that, and what, you know how they say you'll be able to know how to do things? You know, they talk about, we talked about last week, they talked about inspirational thinking. Same spirit, or things will sort of start clearing up for you. Well, one of the gifts of the spirit they talk about in the Bible is something called the gift of discernment. And the gift of discernment is nothing, well, I don't want to say it's nothing more, it's probably more than this, but it's just that you see things. You just get things, you know what I mean? Somebody will be talking and you'll just sort of get it. Sometimes people get into a lot of jams in life. Just big jams associated with people or getting involved in situations or saying yes when they should say no. And 8 months down the road, they look back and they say, I must have been crazy. They're not drinking. They're not drugging. They're going to AA, but they just get hooked up with this one or hooked up with that one. Or they sign their name to this, or they sign their name to that, or they buy this, or they buy that, or they do this and they do that. And 6 months down the road, while they're talking to some people, they say, I must have been crazy. And what that is that's a lack of discernment. They just don't just, and then there are some people, they just sort of notice those potholes. You know, they say, oh, there's one, and they avoid it. They just don't get into trouble. You know, they just, you know, where you'll have five people running towards somebody in AA, and you'll see one guy, and he's walking in the opposite direction. And they'll say, well, don't you see that person? He says, yeah, I'm going over here. Because he knows that that's dangerous. You know, it's the gift of discernment. So when I first read this, you know, you read this at different times. You know, when you read this when you have 1 year, you see one thing. You read this when you have 2 years, you see another. You read this when you have 30 years, you see something different. And sometimes you'll read stuff and you won't really understand what you're reading, so you'll do what I do, what we all do. We don't even know we do it, we just sort of skip over it. I mean, you don't do it maliciously. You just read something that doesn't make a lot. I mean, we're alcoholics. You know, basically, if you're an alcoholic, you read something you don't understand, you just skip over it. It's like we are into the easier, softer way. I mean, really, you know, it's not like one of these things. I mean, you know how hard it is to get something through the four step? You know, I mean, you know, I read a line and I don't understand it. I don't pick up the phone and call up my sponsor and do research on the internet, you know what I mean, for 10 hours and try to get 15 rabbis and a priest to tell me what that means, you know? I mean, you know, I just told you guys that there's a line in the big book that says you have to be a good Samaritan every day. And I just told you where the good Samaritan came from. It came from something called Luke chapter 10. Where Jesus gives the talk on the Good Samaritan. And says, you gotta be that every day. You gotta be that every day. And I just told you where it came from. Now I know, sure as I'm standing here, that when I'm done, one person will look that up. And read it. I just told you that you have to be the Good Samaritan every day. That's in the big book. They got it right from a story called the Good Samaritan. And I know one person will read it. And it's not because it's being bad or good. It doesn't mean you're going to drink or not drink or anything like that. You know what it is? Just a statement. That statement means something to some people. It means nothing to other people. It means different things to different people. It's just a statement. One person will read it. Maybe two. Maybe five. But everybody ain't running home to read it. A year from now, you may ask yourself, why didn't I read that then? I'm reading it now. It makes all the sense in the world. I wish I'd read this 10 years ago. And you won't even be able to answer the question why you didn't read it. But it has just as much to do with alcoholism as resentment. It has just as much to do with that. You know the founders, the guys you say you have what they want? You want what they have? They read it. You want what they have, but you just don't want to do what they did. You want to do it your way. Because your way has worked so well up to now. Now and then a serious drinker being dry at the moment. You got any serious drinkers dry at the moment? They say, I don't miss it at all. I feel better, I work better, I'm having a better time. I mean, there's a lot of people that feel that way in here. As ex-problem drinkers, now this is the thing that I never got. Here's a guy, he hasn't had a drink. He says, I feel better, I'm looking better, I'm having a better time, I don't miss it at all. Now here's the thing I don't get. We laugh at that. It's like a newcomer comes up to me, or a guy with 5 years, or 10 years, or whatever it is, and says, hey listen, I'm not drinking, I don't miss it at all, I feel better, hey I'm having a better time, I don't miss it at all, everything's great. Now, I can't explain this to you. I look at that guy and I chuckle. Because I know he's going to drink again. I know he's going to drink again. And I can't explain that to you. So I'm not even going to try. I know he's going to drink again. It doesn't matter. He could tell me, I'm never going to drink. I don't feel like drinking. I do everything right. I believe in it. He could tell me anything, but I know he's going to drink again. I could look at him. I know he's going to drink again. I can't even explain it to you. Now, but I must not be so odd. You know why? Because they say the same thing. They say the exact same thing. They say, we know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself inwardly. He would give anything to take half a dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. Now, that's an interesting deal when you think about it. I just told you, a guy comes up to me and says that, and I just sort of laugh. I know he's going to drink again. Now, I don't really know he's going to drink again, but I mean, I sort of know he's going to drink again. Or he's going to get, you know, some. I know that he's off. Just like they knew he was off. You know, you think I'm crazy, then they must have been crazy, because that's what they say. Now, I can't explain that to you. Because that sort of discernment, which I believe comes from the Spirit, and comes from a better relationship with God that we talked about in the 11th step, that transformational thing that transforms you where you see things that other people don't see, that comes from time and effort and continuity of effort over a period of time. So I can't explain to you why after 30 years of this, of watching people, I had somebody talk to me today about a guy who was sponsoring who committed suicide. Or at least died of an overdose. And it happened to about two or three guys, and one guy went out and different things happened. And I said this, I said, you know, do you have any idea? I've been sober to be 30 years in January. I mean, I've never counted the number of people I've sponsored because they never told me how to count them. You know what I mean? Listen, just think of it this way. If you sponsor just one guy a month for 30 years, that'd be over 300, right? That's just one guy a month. You know, and what I told him is, I said, do you have any idea how many guys I know who I've sponsored or I've worked with over 30 years who have drank or never made it or died? Or made it for a year and then drank, and then 2 years and then drank, and then 5 years and then drank, and then 1 year and then drank. You have any idea? Far surpasses the ones that have stayed. Now, there's been a group. There's a nexus of a group of people that have stayed sober. Now, I'm not saying it has anything to do with me. I don't take responsibility for it all. I don't take credit for it. I don't take responsibility or credit for the ones that went out drinking. But you know, the bottom line is, and that's important to know on a 12-step meeting, but the important thing is that what I understand now is I don't know whether the statistics that I cite from time to time that I've read, that I'd be happy to send to, are correct. I don't know whether it's only 0.5% or 1% that stay sober for more than 20 years. I don't know whether it's only 1 in 200 or 5 in 200 or 10 in 200. But based upon what I've seen in AA, based upon the people I've seen come in and out of AA, it's not the majority. It's not 50% or 75%. It's a much smaller percentage. And over a period of 30 years, you know, when you see some, I'll put it to you this way. If somebody came up to you and said something like this, a week sober, and said, grapefruit, I want a grapefruit, and then an hour later started drinking, you might not think anything of it. If the next week you sponsored somebody else and they said, I want a grapefruit, and an hour later they started drinking, you might think, well, that's a coincidence. If a month later you sponsored somebody else, you know what I mean? And you're sponsoring other people at the time, the guy says, you know, I'm dying for a grapefruit. You might start being, are you feeling okay? He says, no, I feel better, I look better, I'm having a better time, never felt better, I got no problem. An hour later he's drinking. Now it's a year down the road, and you're sponsoring different guys, and everything. The guy comes home, he says, you know, it's funny, I had a craving for a grapefruit. He says, you know, I think we ought to go to a meeting. He says, no, I'm doing okay. And then he goes out and he drinks. Now, I want you to multiply that times 30 years. So a guy comes up to you, and he says, feel better, look better, having a better time. Boy, I'd love a grapefruit. I mean, I know he's going to drink. I can't explain that to you. You think I'm crazy. Right? And how can I explain to you the experience of 30 years of having somebody look a certain way, act a certain way, be a certain way, say a certain group of things, and at the same time he's doing it in pure alcoholic genius, act like he's doing great. Which is an absolute sign that it's a big problem. You know, cocky almost. How can I explain that to you? I ain't never going to drink again. I don't have it. Everything's going great. And you just know. And you sort of, and then all of a sudden, you read this thing in the big book. You think it's you, maybe it's crazy, and you read this thing in the big book. It says, and then you're looking at this thing. It says, now and then a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, I don't miss it at all. I feel better, work better, having a better time. As ex-problem drinkers, we smile, Sir Sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take half a dozen drinks and get away with them. But he doesn't even know that. And you know that as sure as you're looking at him, and you can never explain that to him, and I can't even explain that to you. And so all of a sudden at 30 years or 25 years or 20 years, that sentence makes absolute sense to me. I know exactly what they're talking about because I've been there. I've done that. That's my experience. That's my experience. But when I had 1 week or 1 year, I didn't know what the hell they were talking about. Sounds like a guy who's a winner to me. And yet it's there in black and white. And then it says this. He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. For he isn't happy about his sobriety. And then you say to me, I'm happy. That's what you say. You say, I'm happy. You say, listen, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm happy. And I laugh at such Sally. Because I know you're not happy with your sobriety. I know you're just happy. But you're not happy in the way they talk about happy because you don't even know what that happiness is all about. Because you think happy is what happy has always been for you. When you think of happy, you think of happy like it was when you were drinking, happy like when it was when you got the job, happy like it was when you had the girl, happy was the way it was when you got the hole-in-one, happy the way it was when you won the lotto, happy the way it was when you have a lot of money in the bank. You think of happy as what you think happy is. But you're not thinking about happy the way they're thinking about happy. You're talking about happy. They're talking about happy with their sobriety, which is a different type of happiness. As a matter of fact, somewhere in the big book it says, if we do things right, we're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. They don't say we're going to know happiness. They say we're going to know a new happiness. So most of you guys, I'm not saying all of you, have never experienced the new happiness. You don't know what the new happiness is. But I'll tell you what, your life depends upon grabbing that new happiness. Your life depends upon that new happiness. Because you're going to be happy in AA for only so long a period of time, and after a while it's going to look like a jail cell. It's going to look like just one more meeting and one more speaker and just some more bullshit. And you're going to be looking at the world. And you're going to be happy, but that's all you're going to be. You're not going to be happy with your sobriety. All of a sudden, the stuff is going to happen. The IRS is going to come. People are going to die. People are going to disappoint you. Life is going to go on. Life is difficult, isn't it? It really doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, have you noticed that people who are sober lose their jobs? They get cancer. Their wives and husbands die. They get divorced. They go through crap. Have you ever noticed that? You know, if you're just happy, happy ain't gonna cut it. You know why I know it ain't gonna cut it? Because you've been happy before. You've been happy before, and happy is a transient thing. Emotional happiness is a transient thing. They're talking about something else. They're talking about something called a new happiness. Whatever that is. So, try to figure out what that new happiness is. It goes here, it says, on step 12, the joy of living is the theme of A's 12 step, and action is its key word. So apparently this happiness must have something to do with joy, whatever that is. I mean, you ever sat there in a bar drinking and say, I'm joyful. You say that right before you get beat up by a bunch of guys. Beat that guy up. What's wrong with you? You know what I mean? Get him out of here. Who invited him to this? Joyful. I don't want to hear that crap. Joyful. We have experienced much of heaven, and we've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. How about that one?
Yeah.
Joyful, the rocket ride. We've experienced much of heaven, and we've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. How about that deal? That's the deal the 12th step is all about. That's the deal you got to grab for. Now, I'm going to change the subject for a second. I'm going to go back to... Now, we've been doing... A lot of you guys have been hanging to these tests for a long time, so you sort of know where I'm going. So this is like a little test. Okay? This is, I'm going to sort of try to simplify this for myself and for you and try to tie in this joy-happiness deal. Now, does anybody know what the real nature of the disease of alcoholism is? I've been only doing this for 12 weeks. What's the real nature? Selfishness and self-centeredness. Very good. You know why? That's not my opinion. You know what it says? It says selfishness, self-centeredness. That we think is the root of our troubles. That's the root. You know, alcohol, has you ever heard this? This isn't me, this is the book. It says alcohol is but a, the alcohol consumption is but a symptom of the disease. The real disease centers in our mind, not our body. Well, what does that mean? That means when you take away the alcohol, you still got the disease. What does the disease look like? It's selfishness and self-centeredness. That is the root of our troubles. So you say, well, what does that mean? What does it mean, selfish? So I say, well, let me give you what they're talking about. They say we're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. That's what you got. If you're not drinking, that you got, you had that when you were drinking, you had that when you weren't drinking, you had that before, you have that now. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-doubt, you step on the toes of others and they retaliate. That's what you do. You make crazy decisions, you hurt other people, you hurt yourself, and they retaliate. Seemingly without provocation, you think they're wrong, you're right. Because your self-will run riot, you want what you want for you, and you're always thinking about you, even when you're thinking about it, it's like the old Beaches movie. Enough about me, let's talk about you. What do you think about me? You know what I mean? It's everything. Even when you're doing good things for people, somewhere in the back of your mind without you even knowing this, that little committee's working saying, what am I going to get out of it? Somewhere 6 months down the road, I can't believe that son of a bitch did this when I did all that stuff for him. There's always something to pay back. There's a list. There's always selfishness, self-centered. It's just, we're just steeped in it. And an alcoholic's extreme example of self will run right, though it usually doesn't think so. Now, okay, so that's the disease. The disease after you get rid of the booze is the selfishness and the self-centeredness. You're always thinking about yourself. 100 forms of, let's make a list. The car, the gal, the guy, the husband, the wife, the boss, you know, the money, the bank account, the clothes, the hair, the nails. Let's just make a list of all the things you think of during the day that you obsess over. No, am I missing any? What am I missing? I'm missing a few things, right? Just start talking about what you were thinking about today. And what you think about all the time. You ever think about the sex? You ever think about the same thing more than once in the day? 5 or 10 times? 15, 20, 30, 40, 100 times? Let me guess. Are these things that have to do with you? They pretty much have to. You ever go to a meeting to talk about you? You ever find somebody in a meeting and you're thinking about you? And you're talking about you? And you're telling people about you? And you're telling people what happened to you? You're talking about them? You're talking about they? You're talking about it? You ever have, you know what people do? They come up to me and say, can I ask you a question? You know what they start doing? They start talking to me about themselves. You know why? Because they're real interested in themselves. They think I should be interested. I try to feign interest. I try to act like I'm interested. I mean, I am interested, you know. It's a form of 12 step, you know. How do you get rid of that thing? You know, okay, you guys have been with me. How do you know what says in the big book? This isn't me. You know, if you don't like this, you know what says in the big book? He says, we must get rid of this selfishness. We must or it kills us. How many people want to die? How many people would like to live? You got to get rid of this or it kills you. You know how that's possible? God makes that possible. Seems no other way. God makes that possible. Now you're going to say to me, well, how does that happen? I can't tell you, but I'll tell you what. You better find that out. It ain't my problem. I've already figured it out. I figured it out, you see. I ain't telling you. No, I'm not.
Because if I tell you, you're just going to spit on it or argue with me because you're alcoholics. You're just going to give me a bunch of shit, and I don't need the aggravation, to be honest with you. I got my 30 years. I'm not here to baby you. You're not babies. You're not 2 years old. I got mine. I know what the deal is. I've given you enough of what you need. I've given you the hint. I don't have to wipe your ass. You're not 2 years old. You either do it or you don't do it. And here's what I know. Some people will do it and some people won't. And the ones that will do it will report back to me. We'll all be in the fellowship of the people. And the ones that won't weren't going to do it anyway. Because it was all right in front of them in the books and everything like that. They just weren't going to read Luke. You know, they weren't going to read them. But they weren't going to do the extra work because they're not interested. They're not interested in that deal. So, above all, we must get rid of this selfishness. We must or it kills us. God makes that possible. Now, here we go. Here we go. You ready? Follow me. This is the whole 12 step. This is the whole deal. I'm going to it. Let's say it works. I heard it worked once for one guy somewhere. But let's say it works. Maybe not 100%. Maybe like 85%. Let's say it works. That somehow, some way, God could come into your life, you could have a relationship with him, and all those thoughts, and all that crap, and all that stuff, and all that selfishness, and self-centered, and all the stuff you think about right now during the day, it sort of left you, and you weren't that way anymore. Let's say you weren't selfish and self-centered anymore. Then you would be, what would you be? You'd be dead. No, you'd be selfless. You'd be selfless, right? So right after that, this is what they say. When we sincerely took such a position, the position of trusting God, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, how would you expect a person who's not self-centered anymore to act and react to the world? This is what it says. Established on such a footing, we become less and less interested in ourselves. Wow. Can you imagine? Our little plans and designs. More and more we become interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. You know, can you imagine that? Instead of sitting about and thinking about your hair, your nails, your clothes, the car, your job, your boss, you're thinking about other people. You're thinking about how you can help other people, what you can do to help people in life, what you can do to... Can you imagine? I wonder what it would be like if you almost obsessively and impulsively thought about that stuff. Thought about other people instead of thinking about yourself all the time. I don't know. We'd have to find somebody that happened to and ask them. See how that feels. Our little plans and designs. More and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in. Apparently when that happens, you get this new feeling of power flowing in. As we enjoy peace of mind, apparently you start enjoying something called peace of mind. As we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, apparently you have a God consciousness, we began to lose, get this, fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. Sounds like the rocket ride to me. Sounds like that new happiness to me. Sounds like that joy to me. Sounds like a pretty joyful deal, right? So let me ask you something. A person who is physically sober, who has had this transformation, who no longer is thinking about himself and is self-centered, and is thinking about how he can help other people, how he can contribute to life and everything like that. If you were that person, you were thinking about that all the time, what do you see that person doing with his life? Do you see that person... you know, looking through car ads to see what car he's going to buy. You see that person sitting around thinking about, you know, comparing himself with other people and thinking about how much money he's making. What do you see that person? Or do you see that person sponsoring people? Or do you see that person maybe going to hospitals and detox centers? Or do you see that person trying to help other people? You know, maybe by speaking, maybe by working behind the bar, something like that. What do you think that person would look like? Wouldn't you expect to see the fruits of what he is in his life, the way he acts and what he does and what he's focused on? Wouldn't you expect to see that? A person who had that kind of joy in his life would act differently than a person who is merely happy. A person who is merely happy says, I'm happy, might look happy, but they'd be really involved in the same stuff you were involved in with the old happiness. They'd be buying cars. You'd say, man, that guy looks happy. He's very, but he would be basically having fun. But the person who was involved in this deal, the deal they're talking about, he's going to be involved. There's going to be a different thing going on, isn't there? It's going to be like a Bill Wilson thing, like a Dr. Bob thing, like the thing all these guys were involved in, right? Now, let me ask you this question. Does any of that make any sense? Okay, now let me ask you this question. Let's say you have a guy that's 25 years sober, hasn't had a drink. He picked up a medallion. You just saw him. He picked up a medallion. And he doesn't sponsor anybody. And he doesn't do any service. You know, and he goes to meetings, but he really doesn't help anybody. He's not involved, you know, and that kind of stuff. What does that tell you about what's going on in that deal? Is that what you want? Is that what you think they're talking about here? They asked Bill Wilson, what do you think of a person that doesn't drink and doesn't go to meetings? He says, I have no use for him because he has no gratitude. Bill Wilson, in the statement that we talk about all the time, he said to Henrietta Simon, he says, the Lord has been so grateful to me, so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep talking about it and telling other people. He was compelled to do this stuff. Now, the truth of the matter is even though it sort of logically makes sense to me now, and I sort of talked to you about it, and it sort of makes sense that a sober individual who has been imbued with this stuff and had this transformation happen to him is going to naturally want to help and go out there. I am going to be the first one to tell you that for the first 10 or 15 years of my life, maybe longer, anything I did in terms of service was not my idea. Because I've got to be honest with you, it says the alcoholic who doesn't accept this devastating weakness and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious and true happiness he'll find none at all. Most of, you know, what does it say? We get rid of old ideas. We spend a lot of time getting rid of old ideas. Most of the time I spent in Alcoholics Anonymous is learning really how screwed up I am. I mean, you have no idea. It says what most people don't know is the alcoholic is a really sick person. I had no idea how sick and how screwed up and how turned around I was. I had learned this over 5 years, over 10 years, over 15 years. Things that I thought were perfectly okay were not perfectly okay. Things that I didn't think hurt me at all, maybe it'd be gossip, maybe it this or that, were hurting me tremendously. And so the truth of the matter is, if you think I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, put the plug in the jug, and sat down, and all of a sudden, going out and helping other people made sense. You know, sponsoring other people made sense. Every DNA bone in my body said, I'm not ready to sponsor, I'm not ready to do that meeting, I'm not ready to talk, I'm not ready to do that. You know, I'm not ready means I'm scared, I don't want to. And if I didn't have a sponsor literally kicking my ass, saying, get in the car, we're doing this, we're doing that, you're doing this, either cajoling me, sweet-talking me, or telling me I had to do something, 90% of the stuff in AA I wouldn't do, including the steps and including the fourth step. And you guys who have been doing this for a while probably realize that most of the stuff that you do now, you're doing it because some sponsor said, you need to become secretary of the group, you need to chair the meeting, you need to speak, you need to do some service work, you need to do this. And I was fortunate enough to hang out with people that told me, you need to do this stuff. Now, the problem is, so that you understand it, so the natural inclination for most alcoholics is to, because we're selfish and self-centered, that's not me, that's the book, is to grab every bit of sobriety you can get out of here, feel better, look better, join the club. You know, I'm a member of the, Nice. Join the club, get the nice, pick up the cake and do that, and then sit back and do nothing. Because I feel better, I look better, I'm having a better time. Because why do anything? And only because my ass is kicked or somebody embarrasses me or something. And you know what the problem is? The old timers, the guys that are doing this, they ain't running around looking to grab people to tell them what to do. I stopped that deal a long time ago. I ain't looking to run up to some new guy and say, listen, I'm going to tell you what to do. Because I don't need the aggravation. Because you can't tell nobody nothing. They'll tell you where to go. Unless they need help, they want help, and they ask for help. So the only guys that even have a shot are the guys that are coming up to you and asking what to do. And then, when you tell them what to do, the guys that actually show up back again. Which is few and far between. So if I was to tell my story, which I'm not now in terms of service, and I'm not bragging, I'm just reporting. And I'm certainly not as good as, you know, they asked Mother Teresa, and I don't say I'm Mother Teresa or anything. They said, well, some guy, reporter from the New York Times, followed around India as she worked in the slums, and he said, at the end of the day, he said, you know, I wouldn't do what you do for $1 million. She said, neither would I. You couldn't pay me enough to do this stuff. And so when you want to know, you know, why am I doing this stuff and why do I do that and why do I respond, why do I, I would have to talk about the hundreds of times my sponsor said, make coffee for the group. You'd be the bartender, okay? Get on relay for 8 years. Be the intergroup rep. Do this and do that and had me volunteer and do things that I would have never done or I didn't want to do or I had excuses about doing. And it was only because I submitted myself to him and I wanted him to like me and I was with him that I even did this stuff. And if I was like many alcoholics and I said, I'm not going to hang around him or I'm not going to get a sponsor, if he tells me what to do, I'm going to avoid him because I don't want to have a sponsor because the last thing I want is to be accountable to somebody or have somebody tell me what, you know, if I hang around the sponsor, he's going to tell me to do stuff I don't want to do. I just know it, so I ain't hanging around him. Or I'm going to make an excuse. So the nature of the alcoholic is to be defined, so you're not going to do it. But the only shot you have of getting this new happiness and this new freedom is by doing it. And then as you do it, the spirit, I mean, I just believe this based upon what has happened in my life. It says nothing ensures sobriety. That's emotional sobriety, physical sobriety, than intensive work with alcoholics. That's what it says in our literature. You know what that means? That means nothing ensures sobriety than intensive work with alcoholics. And you know, nobody's going to intensively work with alcoholics unless they're told to do it, unless they learned it from their sponsor. And most people aren't going to do it. So don't raise your hands. How many people here have more than a year and aren't sponsoring people? Don't raise your hands. How many people have more than 5 years and aren't sponsoring people? Don't raise your hands. No, I really don't want to hear it. Because I've heard, well, nobody asked me. Yeah, that's because you're not talking. You're not making yourself available. Newcomers are stupid. Just go up to them and say, I'm your sponsor. I mean, I'll tell you what. If it was my life that depended upon, if somebody said, I promise you this. If I said, listen, we've taken an A vote. Tomorrow night we're going to kill you unless you're sponsoring somebody. And you believed us. You'd be sponsoring 6 people by tomorrow night. They might not know it, but you'd be sponsoring them. They'd be your sponsee. So don't give me that crap, okay? You know, an alcoholic that wants something will get it. I'm an alcoholic. I know what it's like when you want something. You will nag until you get it. You will find some unsuspecting newcomer who doesn't know shit and say, I'm your temporary sponsor. I'll help you. You will do it. If you're not sponsoring somebody, it's because you don't want to do it. If you're not speaking at meetings, it's because you don't want to speak at meetings because you're not ready, which really means because you're scared. You don't want to be transparent. You want we have, you're willing to go to any length to get it, but you're not willing to go that far. If you're not talking at meetings, it's not because you're humble. Trust me, it has nothing to do with humility. If you're sitting in the back room saying, well, that guy talks a lot, you know, he's not humble like me, you're the last guy to talk about humility. Because unless you've been up here talking to 200 people, becoming transparent, you don't know what it feels like and you don't know what happens to you and you don't know what you have to be and what you have to become in order to do what I do. Okay, and believe me, it's anything but be a bullshit artist. Because alkies recognize bullshit and people that are not genuine like that. And the only reason you're not coming up here is because you know that they'll see through you. And you won't be able to do it. And you're scared. So whatever you do, don't get sponsored by anybody like me. But the great thing about AA is you're safe. You're safe because you can hide out in the bunch. You don't have to go for this deal. You know what I mean? But you know, these are the questions you got to ask yourself. You look at what these guys are doing in the book. You look what they talk. You know, if you read, this is the amazing thing. You read, this is the recipe. This is like a recipe book. You can just read this thing. There's so much you can read about the 12 step. I just want to read about one thing. In working with others. Let me see if I can find this one part. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. By the way, you know who I'm talking to, who they're talking to? You. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day, if need be. It may mean loss of many nights' sleep. How many people at work in service have had loss of many nights' sleep working with alcoholics? Great interference with your pleasures. Great interference with your pleasures. You know, all I hear from people is I can't make it to that meeting because I'm going to movies with my, I'm going this, I'm going to that. All I hear is excuses from people as to why they can't do things because they've got other things to do that are more important. And those suckers never make it. And you know why? Because they don't deserve to make it. They don't deserve to make it. Because they're still childish. I have 6 grandchildren under the age of 6. And I've raised 4 children. I know a lot about children. I know a lot about children. And how they act, I know a lot about adults. And my knowledge of children has gotten even greater in sponsoring a lot of alcoholic men. If you don't think they're like 6-year-olds, you got to sponsor a few of them. Interruption of your business. Interruption of your business. I got a lot of guys give me excuse about their business. It may mean sharing your money, your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and the asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. Well, she's been saying that for years about me. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have to fight with him if he is violent. Sometimes you will have to call a doctor, mistress, on and on and on and on and on. Now, does that mean everybody has to go up and do step series? I mean, but you get the point. These guys were involved in action. The joy of living has to do with action, working in service with other people, doing stuff. Not just, there's a lot of people that are just in here to grab what they can grab and grab sobriety and come to the come to the parties and get the cake and everything like that and then go home. Because they don't want to help anybody because that's the furthest thing from their mind because they don't have the new freedom and the new happiness. You know what they got? They got theirs. They got their job, they got their wife, they got their house, they got to eat the cake, they can say they're in Alcoholics Anonymous, they picked up the medallion, they said their crap, you know what I mean, and then they're back. Because they're not even interested in other people because they haven't gotten the second part of the deal and they don't even know they haven't gotten the second part of the deal because they don't even know what the second part of the deal feels like because they're still thinking all the time about themselves. And I'm not talking about you unless you think I'm talking about you. And then you'll think I'm looking at you. And you'll say you were looking at me. And I'll tell you I was. God bless you. Thank you.